Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have my guest, Sonia Barrett, and we will be talking about her book, The Holographic Canvas, The Fusing of Mind and Matter. Sonia has been the author of several publications and books, and The Holographic Canvas is a very interesting dissertation on the nature of reality and how this reality may be changing in the next few years. Thanks so much for joining us, Sonia. I assume you're calling in from California, is that right?
Yes, I am.
Great. Well, thank you for taking the time.
Thank you for having me on your show.
So, would you like to give your audience a little bit of your history and how you became interested in metaphysics and the study of the fusing of mind and matter?
Well, I've always had a curiosity about the nature of reality since I was a child. And so it was sort of a natural, I think, transition. It was gradual, but at the same time, you know, there was a point in my life where an intense focus was given over to wanting to understand more about life, about what reality was. In my case, I didn't set out and study in that sense. I didn't study with anybody or any of that. It was just one of those things where I was very curious, and I started to dedicate my time to more of a sort of a meditative state that kind of opened me up. I didn't know how to meditate at the time, and it just kind of, I sort of wandered into the field then of meditation. And it opened me up to recognizing that there was certainly more to life than what I was seeing. It's sort of like peering behind the veil of the physical world and really noticing that everything was possible. I did not even take physics, so I did not have a science background. These are things that unfolded from within myself, and over time, I began to connect the dots, or the dots would jump out at me, for example, with information from different, you know, different scientists, people who are speaking on a quantum physics level, and it certainly began to support the kind of information that I was beginning to write about, the information I was beginning to understand. So now, you know, over the years, it's allowed me to be able to really honestly tell people that they have access to all of this information, that we really do have a tie-in, that we are transmitters and receivers in being able to access profound levels of information. But curiosity and life led me to wanting to discover more.
From reading your summary at the end of the book, it sounds that when you underwent your shift, you had a complete change of everything in your perceptual reality occur, and quite some serious challenges.
Yes, I would definitely say so. It, you know, everything changed. Everything definitely changed in my life, and I often speak of that when, you know, when I do workshops and lectures. I think we have to understand that as we discover new things, become aware on more profound levels, the old begins to fall away. And the reason why that happens is because the life that we've been living, we live it based on what our current awareness is. And as that awareness changes, as that consciousness changes, then how you live your life and those things that you come encounter with, or the thoughts that you would normally have, or the experiences that you may normally have, they begin to change because you're not operating on the same foundation anymore. Your foundation of understanding and your perception, belief systems, all of those things change. And reality, are each of our own unique reality, and collectively, yes, is built on what our beliefs are and what our perception base is. And so, yes, many things changed in my life, and change is something that we are all challenged by because it's taking you into the unknown. It's a journey into the unknown, and being able to really surrender to that, to let go, and know that the only reason why you feel uncomfortable is because you are stepping outside of what the familiar was, and the fact that that familiar served its purpose, and yet it was still limiting, and now you have an opportunity to go steps further and further, and the journey, it just goes on and on and on. It's an endless journey to being enlightened. There is no final moment. I think they're just new discoveries that allow us to step up, you know, more and more and more and become freer in many ways.
So you start off the book talking about reality, and things have you been able to glean about how we perceive different realities, especially this third dimensional reality?
Well, our perception of third dimensional reality tends to be, I think, more so on a collective level, very, very final. There's definitely a program, some sort of programming in terms of how we define reality, what we believe reality to be, what we think our limitations are, and it's across the board in that manner. So what I definitely recognized was the fact that we are living reality, or we're living life based on a set of programs and protocols and conditions. And then my question was any of this really set in stone? You know, he's like, where did all of that come from? So I think for me, the biggest thing was the awareness, the realization that we live our lives based on programs. And that doesn't mean that it's a good or a bad thing. But because we are creatures of habit, or maybe I should say, it is because of the fact that we operate on programs that we are such habitual creatures. We like to do things that we are used to doing. It's a habit, so it becomes comfortable. So, you know, I started to recognize that, recognize life from that understanding that we are really all living by a set of protocols without questioning it, or very little questioning of if this is really the ultimate or the final analysis of anything. Socially, we can see that. We have a set of social rules and conditions, not that it's not important. It is to some degree, because in this reality as we know it to be, there's some structure, there are boundaries within which we operate. And so I understand it from that standpoint. But when you start stepping, you know, further outside of that, you start to recognize, well, geez, because even though there are boundaries, it doesn't mean that I am really limited to those boundaries. Those boundaries serve the purpose for us when we are not able to be expansive on our own, when we're not able to stretch our perception, our imagination, stretch our spiritual level, our consciousness, our awareness. When we're not able to stretch, it seems like we need something in place, some sort of construct in place that sort of guides us, that sort of tells us to some degree what to do, what to believe, what to think. And that's what I recognize, that this is how it is. We look at our success and failure program that society has for how we measure everything. Everything has a barometer. So we measure good and bad. When we measure who we are, we define ourselves by these ideas and structures that have been laid out for us. All of that I woke up to, and it was like wiping the sleep from, you know, from your eyes, and looking for the authentic, a more authentic you.
And then when you looked at some of these programs that are going on, programs around food, health, you know, shelter, religion, you found that a lot of the frequency was in the realm of the lower range of fear.
Absolutely. Well, that's what runs the show, is you know, fear is definitely connected to the survival program. I mean, they're sort of basically one and the same. And that's sort of used to, it's like a blanket over the collective. It keeps people in control, because if people are kept in constant fear, then you're constantly in survival mode, and you're too busy. You're just too busy being distracted by protecting yourself in one way or another, whether it be emotionally, physically, whatever way. And this is what we're fed. We're fed this from advertising, you know, to religion as to what's going to happen to you if you don't do this, you know, all the consequences. So we're really driven by fear and, you know, and the need to survive, survival. And it keeps us from really connecting within ourselves. That's really what I see that happens. It's such a distraction because you're so busy going outside of yourself, so busy fearing everything outside of yourself or looking to everything outside of yourself to save you, to protect you, that it is a distraction, and you spend very little time inward and knowing that you really are always in this connective space.
Now, in the section on reality, you define reality as I projected outwards as multiple characters viewed through the window of my mind. Would you like to comment on that?
Yes, I can comment on it. And one thing I also want to say is that, you know, I wrote that book in 2008, and it's been an awesome book. A lot of people really loved it. And there is so much that has come since the days of those books. There I've elaborated so much more on a lot of that information. But I projected outwards. We are a character. We operate as characters. And in a silently schizophrenic manner, we are multiple characters. And I think one of the things that I found fascinating too was, I love to give this example. You'll go and you'll look in the mirror. I could look in the mirror at 9 o'clock in the morning, and I look one way, and I could come back maybe a half an hour later, an hour later, and you look completely different. And you know, there's so many faces to us, and you start asking, is the who that I think I see in the mirror, is that a consistent me? And I think that we are so much more multifaceted, just like we're multidimensional. We are operating on so many levels that we have no idea, and so we get fixed on what we find, what we believe to be, you know, one concept of reality, or basically, yes, one concept of reality, one way of operating, a very one-dimensional way of operating, and then the greater aspect of who we are is projecting itself through all of these faces, all of these components of us. This body is really a vehicle, and so that greater aspect of who we are, that expansive self, is in these bodies, sort of puppeting these bodies, but we are not our body. So we are something much more expansive that is having this human experience through this vehicle in multiple ways, because this body is designed for what? To process feelings and emotions, and that part of us that is not, that is not in form in this manner, that part that comes in, it doesn't process emotions and feelings, but this body is designed to process electromagnetic chemicals, which is, how we process and experience and feel emotionally. So I found that to be also fascinating, because that part just does the observing, and then this other part of us that's the part that has the experience. The thing with this part of us is that much of what we do is automated. It's a lot of our actions and our thoughts and behaviors, have become so automated, and then we can go back to that, the habitual experience. A lot of it is habits and patterns and programming. So that part, this part of us tends to operate based on programs, and those things, those programs just sort of run automatically. And we can all testify to that with certain things in our lives. If you notice certain situations that will happen, your mind just sort of automatically reaches into the past and plays a program from the past that either tells you, oh my God, here we go again, or there's a fear that this is going to happen to you again. So we tend to live in the past. That part of us tends to live in the past because the past is so known and we're so afraid of the unknown. So we live in the past and then we speculate about the future with the information from the past, but we don't really live right here. And so there's that part of us, again, that character self that operates in multiple, operates as multiple characters in multiple experiences, multiple dimensions, but very automated.
Now, one of the chapters is called the Harmonics of Time. Can you explain how time is also a construct and is not an absolute?
Well, you know, that was one chapter that I really, at the time, if I remember correctly, is that the chapter, Harmonics of Time? I think that was the one where I actually was sitting across from the water, the beach, the ocean in Laguna Beach. And I think I was having a very profound experience when I wrote that. It was a moment of waking. I'm going to talk about time, but that chapter I just had to explain. But, you know, it was a beautiful moment where there was some music playing. India Irie was playing in my car. And, I can't remember the name of the song, but she was actually singing about music. And the moment was right, and I saw people going by me of all shapes, colors, sizes, and this love and awareness just came over me at that moment, because what I saw was how we as human beings, everybody was just walking about having their human experience, and how we were all just so asleep and unaware, and how we forgot. But it wasn't what we would define as a bad feeling. It was a love that I felt for everybody, and I recognized that they were all me. We were all connected. So that moment was so profound for me. But the idea of time, which connects really with what I'm saying, everybody is sort of lost in this experience of finality, this very conclusive experience in these physical bodies, and that's, of course, how we're defining the idea of time. We're looking at people aging, you know, we calculate everything, and time is about measurement. Time is about constantly measuring something. You have to be judging something in order to compare. It's a comparative experience. So even if we're comparing distance, we're measuring distance. So time then becomes about some sort of measuring process. If I'm driving at, you know, you've heard some of these analogies, I'm driving at 60 miles an hour, and I'm heading to, from where I am, to Laguna Beach, you know, it might take me 2 hours, but then somebody else driving, going the same way I am, driving at 100 miles an hour, might get there faster. So you start looking at that, and you see how time, sort of the idea of time, is then being collapsed by distance, by the rate of speed that we're going. Now, if somebody could obviously go there in warp speed, what happens? It cuts out time. It's
right.
Like, can we measure it at that point? Exactly.
Right.
There is nothing to calculate at that point. So I started to, really look at all of this a bit more, and I started to really recognize that much of what we understood about time was really more so programming. But not only was it programming, it was necessary. The way we interpret time right at this point, it's also necessary because it is allowing us to have this human experience for what appears to be a period of time. So if everything, if we were conscious that everything was happening in a flash, then what would be lost? The process. We wouldn't get to experience the process. So it's, what do they say? It's not the destination, it's the journey. So being able to experience and savor the full taste and experience of what it is to be human, we have to have this, well, these moments, because they really are just flashes, this, these moments that we interpret as time, that we calculate as time. We calculate as, you know, 60 seconds, you know, make a minute, and then that minute turns into an hour and 24 hours and so on and so forth. So we have to have some sort of calculative process that allows us to have this experience that we really define as time. However, I do feel that as we begin to evolve on a grander level, on a more conscious level, and science is looking at this, so everything I'm saying is always, you know, always back it up with science. But we're starting to see this, and this is why we keep talking about human evolution, you know, human beings, the consciousness is shifting, the planet is, you know, is changing, that as we begin to step up in consciousness, whether we do it collectively or individually, it's going to affect the brain. Now, the brain has a major role. It's like it's a control panel in running this body and in processing the experience that we experience as life, and that is calculated based on the idea of time then. So the brain is allowing all of this to happen. And of course, as we begin to expand or going to greater levels of evolution, I think that's where we're going to see things possible, like teleportation, where we start really consciously jumping through time. And these are things that they are recognizing, that these things ultimately at some point we will begin to see happen. Now, is it that we are not already moving through time in that manner? No, not really. It's not that we're not. It's just that where we are in our evolution as human beings, we are only able to pin down and to recognize certain levels of movement and operation, you know, in this reality. The brain is allowing us to process and to see things according to what we can accept as a possibility. What's part of the human program at this time? And that's really how we're experiencing much of what we define as time. But science tells you that we are appearing and disappearing all the time, because we're what? It's wave and particle. So everything is appearing and disappearing all the time. There is nothing that is static. It's constantly in motion. And hence there is the illusion of time. David Bohm, the physicist, said the universe is at heart but a phantom. There really is no such thing as time. But for us in these physical bodies, in order to process the experience, we have this idea or this experience then that we define as a measurable experience. And I hope that brought some clarity.
Yes, it did. Well, as we approach this change we're going through, which you termed the ascension, which you explain very well in your book, is really an increase in frequency, as well as, you know, be it human, planetary, or even involving the entire solar system. But an ascension process is where there's increased frequency in the system. It seems to me that as we go into the ascension process, time is changing. Is that your experience as well?
Yes, I definitely think so. I think that people are, you know, there's some people that are sort of experiencing that, and people are going, gosh, you know, the day is going faster or shorter or whatever. We're definitely, people are experiencing something, excuse me, with what seems to be the speeding up then of time. And some people are going to experience it even on a grander level. Now, mm-hmm. Now the thing with ascension, there's so much confusion. I very seldom even use the word because there's so much confusion with that. But it really isn't this, I think, fantasy-based thing that some people have floating around in their minds. I think this is, you know, it is a science, and I think that everything graduates. Everything, nothing stays the same, so everything is always having to grow and expand and move to a new level. And that's really how I was recognizing the process that's going on. It's like a graduation of everything. Everything is stepping up a bit more. And when everything cosmically steps up, it affects everything else. There's a domino effect. So even though we're seeing it as maybe our planet, it's affected by so much more that we will never in our bodies understand. But it's like a domino effect. It's like we're at the tail end of an echo and being impacted by that. And when those things change, all life that is within the field, you know, of that planet or the entire universe would be impacted. So the consciousness, mm-hmm. Because everything is frequency-based, is definitely affected. Now, will everybody suddenly be on the same awareness? No. Even though we would like to think that, no. This planet is about definitely diversity. It's, you know, it's polarized. There is free will. There's everybody's experiencing something different. I think everybody will probably experience a gradual shift in awareness, in consciousness, and it will continue to go on that way. But everybody isn't necessarily going to suddenly be teleporting themselves and, you know, mm-hmm. doing all of these things. Because we're growing into our own individual transition. Now, you may be much more open than I am, and you could, grow even more expansively. It doesn't mean you're better than I am or I'm better than you. But you are so open and you're so hungry for knowledge that you just allow yourself to go through this consciousness shift, this expansion, and you have somebody else who's totally shut off. They don't want to hear anything about it, don't want to know about it. Now, how are we going to just automatically impose that on them and say, well, they're automatically going to go into the shift? I don't see it that way. I think that it has to be a progression, even though everybody will be impacted. But like, just like in school, you have kids that can read really well, and you get these that are in the middle, and you get, you know, kids that just don't read well at all. So that's what I see. I see that there is that's the kind of evolution that's going on. It's not a good or bad thing either, and I think we have to understand that it doesn't mean something is good or bad at all. And mm-hmm. everybody has an opportunity, because there is no time technically. And even though we're still trying to figure out, well, what happens to people when they die, where they go, well, what is it said? It's said that energy can neither be created nor destroyed, but it can mm-hmm. you know, change from one form to the other. So because somebody isn't believing what we're believing, it doesn't mean that they're doomed. And that those are, I think, primitive concepts that we have in our minds.
Now, one of the chapters talks about the matrix that we're in as being a series of overlapping programs. And you alluded to this earlier, that we're in different programs, and together that forms a matrix. Can you describe that a little further?
Well, a matrix is really a system. And I know everybody, I think, got confused. You hear when they hear the movie, the Matrix. As soon as you say Matrix, a lot of people associate it. That's a wonderful movie. I love that movie. But yes, a matrix is really a system. So basically, what I was saying is that we are in a system, and it's really just a system in a system in a system, in you know, an endless series of systems. And one of the more basic systems that we operate in, besides us talking about the universe is its own matrix, yes, its own system, unique to itself, and because of its own uniqueness and structure, anything that, all life, anything that is within the structure of the universe exists then based on the requirements then of the universe. The system, how it's designed, whatever the blueprint is for it, whatever life is in it, all the planets, even though they're different, they will somehow have to meet the requirements of that system, no differently than our planet. The gaseous laws of this planet, everything on the planet has to then be in alignment with those laws of the planet, those gaseous laws of the planet, because we, you know, we breathe oxygen, and there's certain gases that are required in our environment to keep the environment going, to keep our planet going. So we can look at those systems or those matrix, we can look at it from that standpoint, that those are, they're their own unique matrix, their own unique system. And then we go to our planet on another level, and we can look at the way human beings operate, as I mentioned before, that there is an invisible matrix or invisible system that is made up of some specific programs, some specific protocols by which we as human beings are operating and have come to accept as sort of a final way of operating, then our birth to death programs, things of that nature, are how we operate. These are programs within it, and these programs sort of just get passed on genetically. I mean, you know, through the human gene pool, and we sort of accept all of these things as a possibility. We accept that this is the way it is. This is the way life is, and we just pass it on and on and on until somebody begins to question these things. Only then do we begin to change the programming. The programming, some of the programming becomes very sort of prehistoric, and they get thrown out. I love to use the analogy of the Earth is flat. For a long time, that was the program. That was the belief. That's the program. People mm-hmm. could get killed behind saying anything that was outside of the collectively understood program. Until eventually, you know, it's proven or somehow people wander into the understanding and the acceptance that, well, no, the world, it's round. So this kind of programming that goes on and on and on. What we understand today with science, and what scientists will say no to, that it's not possible, in 100 years, we will see that programming, it no longer exists. Now we've stepped up into something else. And it goes on and on and on in this manner. And this is the reason why I emphasize to individuals that it's really important that we really begin to realize that the possibilities and what creation can be is so much bigger than the understanding that we have at this time, and that the programs that we have, that we are provided or given, and the belief systems that we're given at this time about what reality is. We as individuals have to be the ones to step outside the box and to realize that you cannot box creation in. You do it because it makes us, we feel more comfortable. We feel a little bit more in control when we bring a final analysis to what we think creation is, and we limit it. But in all honesty, from what we're seeing, it really can't be limited. It really can't, because look at how much has changed. Look at all the stuff science figured out 100 years ago, and some of it is quite obsolete, because now we've grown. We have opened our perception. We have expanded ourselves. And when we do that, is it that creation changes? No, it doesn't. We have just opened ourselves to be able to see more of what already is. And I think we start looking at it that way and start realizing creation isn't becoming anything else, really. We are just allowing, we're just seeing as much as we can accept as a possibility. So we're biting off small pieces like a baby. We bite off small pieces, and as you know, we get older and we can chew, then you start eating other things. And the journey seems to go on and on this way. So I have no boundaries or limits on what I think creation can be. I am just in embrace of what I am seeing at this time. But I know that what I know today to be a truth, tomorrow or maybe next year or next week, that truth will have become even more expansive. And it doesn't disqualify what you thought was a truth, because for you it was true then, because that's as far as your perception allowed. And so I think that there's this beautiful dance that we're dealing with in terms of creation and who we are and what's possible, and really opening up ourselves to more.
Yeah, they say that spiritual growth is more about dropping belief systems than taking belief systems on. It's
mm-hmm.
actually the shedding of belief systems.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Now, it is. So the next sentence here was, it segues into this nicely. The object of ascension is to master this virtual illusion, whereby ascending into a more fluid state of consciousness.
So the mastering, well, yes, it does. It sort of, everything I said before sort of sums it up, that it isn't this airy-fairy fantasy-based
mm-hmm.
thing, but it really is this beautiful expansion that is going on all the time, and you are expanding into greater levels of awareness, and greater levels of awareness is to expand in consciousness. That's what
mm-hmm.
it is when we're saying that we are shifting vibrationally, our consciousness is being elevated. It means that our level of awareness is being elevated. The frequency or the vibration of our awareness is expanding, and it's measuring a more expansive frequency then. And then we keep going. And I think I might have used the analogy of the fan in the book as well, in terms of trying to explain the shift in frequency and also and even time. I like to use the analogy of the fan in terms of the increase of the frequency. You know, the fan is
mm-hmm.
spinning slow, and you can see it, and it's, you know, obviously it's slower, and then each time you hit a different speed, you notice it spins faster, and then there's a point where you pretty much don't even see the blades.
Mm-hmm.
It's spinning so fast, and it doesn't mean that it's not there. There's no, the blades aren't there, but it's spinning much faster. Now, what would happen if we walked into it? Well, you'd get chopped up. And why
mm-hmm.
would that happen? Because we are vibrating at a much lower rate of speed than the fan.
Mm-hmm.
That's why. You would have to be, and so when you're shifting in consciousness, that's really what you're doing. You are shifting in the vibration of your consciousness. The frequency, the rate of speed is changing, and all of that is really kind of what begins to happen with the planet in terms of being aligned with whatever shifts going on. And we speak about, you know, global warming and the planet's getting hotter and the fear of what if it gets too hot, and you know could people burn up. I mean, all of these things, I think in years to come, I think we're going to find that it's a very prehistoric understanding, things that we didn't understand why we feel that way. But human beings have been known to be very adaptable, that we adapt. We have adapted to growing or expanding on this planet from, you know, cultures that had too short of legs and had to run from dinosaurs or tigers or bears, and then they needed to grow longer legs, and, you know, they wished they would, and then the legs grew, and, you know, and the brain grew and expanded. all because what? It had to meet the demands of the environment. So I think we tend to forget that this is constantly going on, and we're constantly meeting the demands of the environment as we go along as human beings. And I think these things we have to begin to be aware of. And that, when you begin to move into that level of awareness and consciousness, and you remember that you are a transmitter and a receiver, you are transmitting information and you're receiving information. Every time you breathe and you inhale and exhale, you're transmitting and you're receiving. We remember that we can pick up and know and feel information. We're being fed the information. We're tuning into the bandwidth of things that to come. You can feel that there's something that's not comfortable. I don't have a comfortable feeling. Oh, I don't feel like I want to be around here today. Oh, then, a flood comes or whatever the case may be. Don't go down the street today. Don't go down. Don't turn left today. There was an accident. It's like this through the whole journey. If we just begin to realize that we really can be online, we are online all the time. We just have to become aware of that being online. It's the grand internet. Creation is this massive grand internet, especially if we're looking just at our universe and the fact that, it is a massive internet and we're all linked in. But we have gotten so programmed to look outside of ourselves that we're completely distracted when we are being guided and when we are receiving information. We doubt it, we question it, and we go with the external. So it's coming back to that place and recognizing that we really are these bodies, especially these finely tuned, amazing technology, just a grand divine technology. And we are beautifully designed and we are equipped on all levels for this journey and beyond this journey, and just really beginning to embrace that. We are always ascending. We are always growing. We're always expanding. We're all doing it at different rates of speed.
Now, you do talk in the book about activation of the crystal palace in the limbic system, hypothalamus, thalamus, pineal gland, and pituitary. You want to comment on how that has been shut down and what it takes to wake it back up?
I'm laughing because I go, what is this today? Because the show I did before this, they asked me that. The interview I did about a half an hour before, and I haven't talked about any of these things in radio interviews in a while. Like I said, the book, I have done so much since the book. But anyway, the bottom line of it is that those parts of the brain do need to be activated. Now, somebody was asking, how do you do that? And what I've learned is that we tend to be very fractured in our approach to maybe spirituality and our approach to growth. And it's no different than the Western medicine, where we want to fix, we want to remove this from over here, but it doesn't, the whole being is still not addressed. We want to fix different pieces. And in this situation, I like to keep people reminded, the activation of those centers are really truly based on your own growth, your own desire to grow and to shift in consciousness and to want to learn more and to want to step outside the box. That's really what triggers and activates those areas to begin to produce the hormones that they normally produce. And the calcification of the pineal gland generally starts happening, it's before they even enter, even puberty. But when we get into this real adult mode, we need to understand that whole idea of being an adult has really limited us, because we get into this box, this I don't know what we call it, this mature box that is this program of do's and don'ts and limitations of our imagination. The minute we shut down our imagination and go for the social programs of just success, the success and failure program, we're so busy trying to meet the conditions of the social expectations and programs that, guess what, we're not really doing anything new, not in the way that is required for that part of the brain. We need to always grow in a way, like in this conversation, the things that we're talking about, to stretch ourselves, stretch our perceptions, stretch ourselves in terms of our belief systems, or really examining or getting rid of some of those old limiting beliefs, and do new things. New things create new neural pathways. That is also very significant in terms of the activation of the brain. Now your brain is getting the message that, wait a second, we have life to be lived. We are not ready to shut down and die. Well, that's why everything starts shutting down, because there's nothing new coming in. You get nothing new coming in. Your brain, there's no reason to keep the body from aging or reactivate some of those centers in the brain. So it just starts to shut down. And what I'm saying is, it doesn't even matter if this is not your thing and you've never been into this. Just go look at basic information that they're discovering, even for seniors. They're recognizing that seniors live longer when they begin to learn new things. When their brains are active, they are healthier, and they'll live longer. Well, you take it on the bigger scale that I'm saying it. We have to stretch our minds and become so much more curious about the nature of reality, about the nature of what's possible for us as human beings, as individuals, what's possible. And if you are so locked in to just your religious belief, which your religious belief, not knocking it at all, I grew up in the church, but, you know, when you're so locked in to the fact that somebody has given you an organized set of beliefs, concepts that you cling to, and dare anybody try to interject anything else to trigger your curiosity or your questioning, but you just want to stay locked in, that is a sure way to shut down that part of your brain. And I don't think that for those people who are Christians, from everything that I remember and everything that I've even went and looked in my Bible, even after I started stepping further, I realized that I didn't see anything that was being said in there. Jesus didn't say that. He said, greater works than these shall ye do. Whether somebody else wrote it or not, the fact is, how can you do the greater works then if you are limited and you're locking yourself into a box? To me, that would be a dishonor of this kind of information. We are supposed to discover, to understand, to expand, and to allow creation to manifest and reflect itself through us.
So I'm just going to read this one thing from that I think summarizes some of what we're saying. An expanding consciousness is expanding through an increase in vibration. This is the process of ascension. An increase in vibration is an increase in spin or the movement of energy at cycles per second. And you go on to describe the visible light field and then on up the ladder of electromagnetic light, sound, and color spectrum. So essentially, this is our natural growth. We will naturally, no matter what happens, we will naturally increase our awareness, increase our vibratory rate, and as such, the external world will shift when we shift internally.
Absolutely.
Is that correct?
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, and someone might look at it and go, well, geez, well, that's not, it's not shifting. Now, let's look at collectively. Let's look at the mass consciousness. Look at the belief system just across the planet on a much larger scale, how limiting the belief systems have been about spirituality, about our understanding of science. Just think of how dumbed down we have been, because, you know, there's a lot that we don't learn in school that would definitely increase our awareness level, our intelligence level, or our curiosity level, but we're just we're really not taught any of that in school. We're not really taught to question certain things in school and to be, you know, to be curious. So, what was the other part of the question? I wanted to make sure I answered that other level of the question. What was it again?
I think the important thing for me is understanding that what is perceived externally in the world,
right, that was
is very much a reflection of the internal state
Absolutely.
Of vibratory frequency. So
Absolutely.
That would probably be the second part, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. And we are looking. We go back once again to the scientists. What do they say? They
mm-hmm.
talk about the observer effect. They talk about the fact that you can't observe something without affecting it. That we are really the ones that are affecting and determining what reality looks like. And this is in our own private reality as well, not just collectively, but our own private belief systems form the reality experience that we are having in our own personal lives. So the observation, and how is that affected? By your perception. And what is your perception affected by? Your belief system. And your belief systems could come from programs from childhood, from all kinds of programs, religious programs, social programs, family programs, beliefs about yourself, so many different programs that you are forming, you're shaping your reality based on. So naturally, when we go to what we would say is observing reality experiencing or defining reality, naturally we're going to come to the table with what? With our belief systems. Our perception is going to be filtered through our belief system. So naturally we're going to then have a relationship or an experience with anything that will sort of meet the guidelines or the qualifications of our existing belief system. And we're gonna form a world around ourselves that is relevant to what we believe, even though we say, well, I don't believe in this, I don't believe in war. But deep down, there is something in us that seeks out that same frequency and just sort of pulls it towards us, and we start operating in it. We see it with people with relationships, people with romantic relationships that end up in the same kind of pattern over and over and over again. You know, we get caught in these patterns, but then we blame it on other people. And even though you may have had, you know, these things as a child, there has to be a point, and I know how these programs really set in, but there has to be a point where we recognize that, wait a second, in the end, it really is about me. So regardless of what was done, you know, how we see it being done by somebody else, we have to come to that place where we go, okay, wait a second, I am ready to change this. I really am. And commit to it and not just put it off on, yeah, but if he hadn't done that or if she hadn't done that, then if you keep saying that, you are not going to, you're not going to heal past the situation. You're just going to keep, you get yourself caught in a loop. And so that is the same observer effect. That's the same thing I'm saying with your perception. Same thing with what's going on out there. So we have to look at it. It's the same formula being used throughout, you know, the full course of this experience. We're operating on the same formula, the observer effect, collectively and individually. Wow, what is your belief system? What do we believe? What do we believe? In the end, it comes down to, you know, you throw out a lot of those beliefs because they are limiting, they handicap us. They're not a good or bad thing. We can just we should have no regret. But what we do is we look at everything as a learning experience, as an opportunity. You've had the opportunity to know what those things feel like, to experience those things. And I say this because I have lived through some really challenging experiences, abusive marriage, you know, just things. But I got it. I understood. And so therefore there was no blame. There was this growth, there was this graduation, there was there's this evolution that takes place. And experiences, I like to say, are experiments. And that's what we do on the planet. We come here to be human and to have a human experience. whatever that may be, and you might not have the experience I have, I might not, but collectively, we are allowing the human experience to take place. So experiences are really experiments, and we move forward, and we graduate to and allow ourselves to let go of the past and move forward. Live now, not so much in the future, because the future, everything that we do is speculate. We speculate about the future, but we use the past to speculate about the future.
Well, we're coming up on the end of our hour, but I would like you to give some contact information for our audience that want to learn more about what you've been talking about today.
My website is spiritinform.com. That's my main website, spiritinform.com. Been there 10 years. There's a lot of information on there, tons of articles that I've written over the years. Those are all free. My store has lots of videos, lectures that I've done in the past several years that really go into a lot of this stuff for profoundly. 6 month workshops that I have done, worked with people in these workshops for several years, and just a lot of information, a lot of content. If anybody wants to know more about all of this. And I do a radio show called Inner Bridge Radio. It's all can be accessed on that website. And I produce a publish a magazine called Reality Bridge Magazine. You can also access it on that web on the same website as well. And you can click and view it for free. And my film that I'm producing called The Business of Disease, the trailer, you can see thebusinessofdisease.com and view the trailer. And like us on Facebook and comment on YouTube. I think that's probably basically it. And anything I'm doing, you can always find on spiritinform.com. I'm doing a two-day workshop at my house, too, but that's probably to a select few people. People are a little bit more familiar with my work, but that's in January.
Okay. When is your film going to be out?
Well, we are hoping that we can aim for winter. We were hoping for the fall, but we're hoping that by the end of winter, by the end of this year, or before that, that it will be out. So that's kind of, where we are. It's definitely been a journey, but it's going to be soon. It's going to be very soon. And T-shirts are actually, people can buy T-shirts if you want to support the film. It's wonderful T-shirts. It says The Business of Disease. The cure is in the body, not in the business. And that's on the businessofdisease.com website.
Well, I'd like to invite you back on the show when you have released the film. We can talk about the film.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you having me on.
Well, we have just a few more minutes. You've mentioned that this book was written back in 2008. Mm-hmm. So there's been a lot of new material that you've brought in since then.
Go ahead. No. Go ahead. I was just going to say I've been so busy that there was a second book started. I just have not a chance to finish it. But a lot of that information can be found, though. A lot of the new stuff can be found in all those workshops that I have done, all the workshops and the lectures, and there's the articles that have been written. So lots of information is available that took the book to the next level.
Well, great. And I also would like to have you back on the show sometime to go over, what you've learned since then, even though it might not be yet in a book form. You have been teaching it in your workshops and your articles and everything. So it's probably at least an hour worth of material, I would imagine.
Probably 10, several hours worth of material. No, there's tons and tons of it, because I've done quite a bit of 6 month workshops where we meet for a month. So workshops, by the time we're done, it's 15 hours, and that's been for like 4 years, plus all the smaller ones and all the lectures I've done in different places. So,
Well, great. Well, I really enjoyed your book, The Holographic Canvas. It's a very complete work of analysis of what reality is, the matrix we live in, the vibratory nature of reality, and as we talked about on in this hour, how important it is to understand that your external reality is really a projection of what is internal. So turning within to make changes is more effective than trying to change things out in the external world. And I'm sure that that's part of what you teach in your workshops, because that's very important concept. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I look forward to talking with you again. Please let Nicole know when would be a good time to get you on for the film. You know, probably after it's released would be better. Mm-hmm. And thanks so much for joining us. I appreciate you giving us the time.
Thank you so much for having me on.
All righty. This is Dr. Susan Cobb with Temple of Health Radio Show. Please join us next week.